I'm hearing lots of beeps, so I'm sure there's quite a few people coming on today. It's great to hear.
So how do we silence our phone so if I make some noise over here, I'm not bothering people?
You can either use the regular mute button on your phone, or you can hit *6.
Okay, thanks.
Let me verify that just to make sure.
That is correct.
That's correct. Thanks, Joanne.
Yeah.
And if you guys get rowdy, we can just mute all of you at one touch of a button. We have that kind of power here.
Rowdy is good.
Well, we'll slowly get started here. Today we have Mr. John Bassard joining us. He owns several schools down in Maryland called Kix Karate. And he is one of our top clients and has been for many years. He currently has 4 locations, and I pretty much have some communications with him every month, and he always has some great ideas and things going on at his school, so I thought it would be great to have him on today, and thanks very much, John, for agreeing to come on.
Not a problem at all. I'm happy to do it.
Why don't we start off and just have you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, how long you've been in the martial arts school business and some general info.
Okay. I guess I took my first lesson back in 1979, so I guess it's about 26 years I've been involved in the martial arts. I trained under Grandmaster Kiwon Kim just outside of Washington, D.C., and got the majority of my training through him until he passed away in 1993. And then I opened Kix Karate in 1994, our first location, and we've been in business for about 11 years. And over that time, we've opened 4 different locations, and all of them are doing very well. And you know, I guess that pretty much is the basic information there.
Well, you know, one of the things that that I think a lot of people are interested in is multi-school operations. But in conversations that we had, I remember you making comment one time that, you know, it's each individual school is its own entity, and there's some extra benefits that you get, obviously, for having more than one. But there's some core things that you're doing at each of your locations. So even if you're a single school operator, these are the things you know that you would recommend everybody to duplicate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, as I've told you many times in the past, you know, my role for business is just to keep it as simple as possible, so that, you know, everything we do, you know, from school 1 through school 4 and hopefully school 5 soon, will just be to, you know, try to set up everything, you know, as simple as it can be done, not to have procedures that are too complicated, you know, sort of keep the certain rules in mind, like customer service always comes first. You know, we call it student service in the martial arts, but, you know, what we try to do at our schools is, look at everything from the student's perspective, from the customer's perspective, not so much from our perspective, and then, you know, try to find something that works. And, you know, everything that we do in terms of growing our business is looking at what we've done. And I would say that, you know, the systems that are in place now at the Kix Karate's locations, you know, aren't the same systems that were in place even a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, because what we're constantly trying to do is, you know, just tweak things a little bit to always make them a little better. And by making them better, to me, simple is better, not more complicated is better.
Right, which is a tremendous challenge, because as you grow, things can get more complex, and we have the tendency to, you know, follow along and make our procedures more complex, and it seems that you work to simplify. Can you give us one example of something that you do that's, you know, very, very basic, but it supports such a large school?
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, simplicity for me, you know, is at all levels, because I'm not a real complicated person. You know, everything from, you know, our basic phone call to, you know, the introductory lessons that we teach, the enrollment conferences that we have, you know, what I've tried to do is create things within the school that will allow my people to succeed. So, for example, if you look at the enrollment conference, which is something that, you know, a lot of people have some trouble with, you know, we created basically a cheat sheet. It's a list of all of the benefits that we have in our program, so that the, you know, the program directors, the employees that I have working at the school, You know, it's very easy for them to flip the book around right in front of the person and say, you know, here's what you're going to get. So they don't have to be real intelligent. They don't have to be, you know, exceptional salespeople because it's written out in simple detail for them. You know, we keep our student-teacher ratio at this level, and, you know, you're going to get a chance to participate in all our school events and activities, and all of, you know, all of the points are bulleted, and they just go down, and it just shows the person step-by-step what they need to do. So by doing it that way, whether I'm doing it or whether, you know, one of the staff at one of the schools is doing it, it's a very simple process for them to follow. So by keeping the enrollment simple that way, you know, it allows them to succeed. And then as we get into, you know, the point where, you know, where the person is going to make that decision to enroll, we even make that as simple as we can. We don't give them three choices or four choices. They get two choices. So that, again, the people who are doing the enrollments, they don't have to be, you know, super salesmen. They don't have to know, you know, how to explain four different options for the person. You know, they get a choice when they pay, you know, three ways they can pay, cash, check, or credit card, and two options when they enroll. Did, you know, do they want option A or option B, and that's it. So, you know, the simpler we keep things, the easier it makes it on the staff, the easier it is to understand from the, you know, the student's perspective, and, you know, that's just sort of the general philosophy that we try to follow.
Well, I can't agree with you more on that, because certainly the more complicated you make something for the customer, they tend to lean towards the easier thing, which sometimes is no decision at all. So by giving them only two choices, which of course are tailored based on your experience, is going to work out in your favor, and we certainly see that here in terms of your numbers of with enrollment. One of the things that that strike me that I'd love for you to explain is most of the time when we get memberships, term agreements, we usually see a lot of, say, a 6-month program or 12-month program, and, of course, longer-term Black Belt Club-type programs. You have a 9-month program. Can you explain why you have this, you know, sort of in-between number?
Okay. Well, I can tell you, you know, again, everything we do today is based on mistakes that we've made in the past. So, you know, here's what I found. You know, way back when I started years and years ago, when I came into the business, I was, you know, like a lot of people, I started with the educational funding company, and they told me I needed to have a 1-year enrollment, and that's sort of what we stuck with, and, you know, we gave them a couple different options of doing that. And what I found was that, you know, particularly the younger people, you know, 1 year, you know, when you talked about 1 year, it was sort of a distance in time that, first of all, was very difficult for the young kid to commit to because they didn't understand how long a year was. Secondarily, the parent looked at it and said, wow, that's a really, really long time. The second thing that happened was we actually started with a 6-month program. Well, the 9-month program came about because we looked at our advertising and what we were doing at this particular time and what we've been doing for probably the last 6 or 7 years in our advertising is we always advertise one free month. And we have two basic options for them in that free month. But everybody that comes into the school, whether they come in on a VIP or whether they come in from an ad we ran or as a referral, they're all offered this 1 month of free training. Well, what we did is we wanted to incorporate, and I'm going to try to explain this. It's you know, it's a little complicated. If somebody had a worksheet in front of them, it would be, you know, a little easier to understand. But basically what it is I sat down and I said, okay, you know, if we're charging, you know, $120 a month for our Little Ninja program, if we sat down and we said, okay, we're going to give them a free month, what we wanted to do was we didn't want to actually give them a free month. What we wanted to do is we wanted to incorporate the free month into their program. So when they came in, we would say, you know, here's option one is, you know, you can take your free month, you try it out. At the end of the free month, if you decide you want to enroll, there's a one-time registration fee. That fee's $100. Now, you also will pay your first month's tuition at that time. The fee for that is $120, so your total down payment is going to be $220. And then, you know, it's a 9-month enrollment, and you know, so you have to commit for 9 months, so it's $220 down, and then it's $120 a month for each of the next 8 months. Mm-hmm. Now, if you do it that way, and you said, okay, well, what's option B? Option B is a little different. Option B is the one that most people choose, and here's why they choose it. what we're going to do is take your free month. Instead of you taking it right up front, we're going to spread it out over the length of the nine-month course. By spreading it out over the length of the nine-month course, you divide 120 by 9 months. That equals $13 a month. So we're going to knock $13 a month off the price. So instead of, you know, if you choose option B, instead of paying $120 a month, you're only going to pay $107. So your down payment today is going to be $107, because if you do this, we're also going to waive your $100 registration fee. So you're still going to get your free month, but you're going to get it over time. We're going to waive the registration fee. We're also going to throw in a free uniform for you. And basically, you're going to enroll today with a $107 down payment. It's going to be $107 per month for each of the next 8 months. That's your 9 months that you're committing to. And, you know, which option would you like, A or B? You know, and so the reason that we have 9 months instead of 6 or 12 is, if, you know, I don't have a calculator in front of me, but if you divide 120 by 6 versus 120 by 9, you know, it's a greater number. So if it's $13, it might be, you know, take $20 off a month. And frankly, I didn't want to take $20 off a month.
Right.
So, you know, the 9 months sort of came about as 6 months was too short and 12 months was too long. And 9 months just sort of seem to fit. The other thing that happens is, especially, you know, most schools right now are very busy. They're in back-to-school season. And, you know, if you think about it, the average school year is about 9 months, or just about, you know, a little longer than that. So the majority of the people, when you come in, they don't really object to that. And, you know, it's a length of time that most people will want to do. It's also long enough to get them in the habit of coming to class, so that by the time they finish that 9 months, they're heavily involved in your program. They really understand what it's all about. You know, it's not a short-term course where, you know, they're just there for a few months. They're there for an extended period of time. And then, of course, the way that we run all of our agreements is, as soon as they hit month 10, when the first 9 months is up, they automatically renew. And if, you know, to take that little ninja example again, they start out at 107. They're at 107 for the first 9 months, the down payment plus 8 months. And then in the 10th month, it auto-renews automatically, and it goes up to 120. So, you know, we basically are renewing and upgrading them in month 10. We don't have to do any additional paperwork. And, you know, it's just very easy to, you know, to run for our staff, because they only have to sit down with the person one time. They don't have to continually do it and upgrade programs.
Yeah, that's, I mean, as a parent, certainly I would look at that option too, and that would definitely appeal to me. And, of course, the numbers that you're starting with, you understand the programs you're putting together, so you make the numbers work for you. So, the, you know, people that are out there maybe looking at it and saying, if I did that to my current numbers, you know, what would that produce as a result? And I think one of the things you've done, John, is you've created the number that you wanted, and then you made the numbers work out in your favor, and that's how you ended up at the 9 months. So it's important at looking at the overall pricing.
That's exactly right. You know, it's a concept that, you know, the retail industry, department stores have been doing it for years and years and years. They put a price on a polo shirt and say it's, you know, $60, when really they only really wanted $30 for it. And, you know, of course, they, you know, as soon as they leave it on the shelf for a week, and then they have a sale that says 50% off, and it's, you know, they wanted $30 for a shirt. It looks like it's 50% off, but, you know, they're getting the price they wanted for it anyway.
Exactly. You know, one of the other things that I wanted to ask you about today is, throughout consulting, I do some, Melody and Schumann and Ali Alberigo are two senior consultants that spend a lot of time doing this, and that's really talking to schools about their marketing and the type of marketing that they do, in terms of, you know, VIP things or advertisements and radio and TV and flyers and all these different things. And I think that a lot of times what gets overlooked, and things that obviously Melody and Ali try to focus on as well, is the message within the advertising. It's not just the advertising, it's the message. And if you're not reaching your target audience with the proper message, you can have a great ad, but it may not produce the type of results that you're looking for. And I was wondering if you could share with us, because you've been around for so many years, and you've been certainly targeting your various communities, what is your overall message that you're getting out about your schools that makes people want to come to you?
Well, you know, I think the first thing you have to do is define what it is that you do. And, you know, basically my schools are family martial arts centers. That's what we cater to. We try to open locations in the suburbs where there's a lot of, you know, single-family housing and townhomes, that type of thing. And those are the people that we cater to, young families. And, you know, what we try to do is, you know, in many of our ads, it'll, you know, it'll say Kicks Karate, the Family Martial Arts Center, and there's always a picture of a cute little kid there, and then maybe a list of the different programs that we offer. But what we try to do is we try to get, you know, one person from the family involved and then additional people from the same family involved as well. So, you know, really the message is that, you know, we're the Family Martial Arts Center. You know, we're sort of the kinder, friendlier, gentler version of, you know, the traditional martial. You'll never see anybody in, you know, in one of our ads, you know, with a frown on their face or a mean look or anything like that. We try to put, you know, cute kids. Sometimes if we're advertising for fitness kickboxing, you know, we'll have you know, ladies on there with a big smile on their face, that kind of thing. So, you know, everything is sort of about the atmosphere that we're trying to create at the school. And, you know, even the name that we chose, you know, when I first incorporated my school, my instructor's nickname, you know, way back when he used to train in Korea and Japan, was the Typhoon. So when he passed away, I said, you know, I'm going to dedicate my school to his memory, and I'm going to call it the Typhoon School of Karate. Now imagine calling your school the Typhoon or the Hurricane School of Karate with what's been going on, you know, in our world today. It doesn't necessarily, you know, conjure up great images. So, you know, one of the things that we did early on was I said, you know, that this name just sounds too violent. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't fit what we want to do. And, you know, we came up with the name Kicks Karate because I wanted people to have something that was easy to remember, something that was sort of friendly, something that didn't, you know, that just sort of, you know, was sort of catchy, and that's the way we focused on it.
Well, one of the other things that I've also noticed in our relationship is that the way that you run your schools is a tremendous amount of consistency on all levels of your business. So when you mentioned the ads and that everybody's smiling, it obviously conjures up the thought that everybody is having a good time. Why don't you explain the three rules that you have in your school, because I think that reaches the level of customer service, and that's where you excel it with your retention numbers as well.
Well, you know, when we train our staff, you know, we basically tell them that we have three rules for every class. And the three rules are whatever the students are doing, and rule number one and two can be, you know, interchanged or, you know, reversed in any way. But the first two rules, you know, are sort of tied for number one. But number one, whatever they're doing has to be safe. You know, if they're doing an obstacle course in class, you know, you got to make sure that there's no slip and fall hazards. You know, there's nothing that they could accidentally run into. There's nothing that would be a trip and fall hazard. You know, if they're doing techniques on each other, that, you know, that it's, you know, that their partners are the same height, and, you know, you don't have one guy that's sort of a real tough kid partnered off with a kid that's, you know, maybe not so tough, where he's going to get, you know, roughed up a little bit. You always look to make sure that what you're doing is safe. The second thing is whatever they're doing in class has to be fun. And I think that this is the thing that a lot of the owners and instructors overlook, is that, you know, we're martial artists, and, you know, to us, just going in there and working out is fun. But to your average kid, you know, they have so many choices in the world today, you know, in the different sports that are out there, the different activities that they can do. You know, if your classes aren't fun, they're just not going to come. They're going to go and they're going to do something else. So whatever you're doing has to be fun. And the third thing is that they have to be learning something that's going to help them reach their next belt level. So those are the three rules. Make it safe, make it fun, make sure they're learning something that's going to help them get to their next belt. And if you do that, you keep the kids coming back, you keep the students coming to class, they're enjoying it, they want to continue, and, you know, eventually they make it to black belt.
And there goes, you know, there goes the simplicity again. I mean, these are three real basic rules that I think your staff, you know, hears and they understand, and it's something that they can refer back to all the time. So there's another example of you not making things complex, even for your employees. You know,
that's true.
One of the things that I'm a very big advocate of, and I run into schools that are just starting up, And one of the mistakes I think they make is they immediately try to arrange for some kind of unlimited lessons for all their new students because they want to give them so much. And I try to talk them out of that and say, you know, unlimited lessons are perhaps for maybe a Black Belt Club program when the student is really involved. I'd like to see them doing twice a week. So I'm so glad to hear that you do you do twice a week programs so I can get some support on this. But can you explain from your perspective of how that's actually worked for you and why you don't do unlimited lessons from the very beginning?
Well, I'll tell you a couple things. First and foremost, you know, what you have to do is you have to look at, you know, we're all hamstrung in this way. There's no possibility of having, you know, successful daytime programs for two reasons. The parents are working, you know, your adult students are working most of the time, and the majority of the children are in school unless they're homeschooled or, you know, you may have some real, real young ones that could come during the day. But, you know, the 98% of your student body is going to be coming between the hours of, you know, let's call it 4 and 9 p.m. They can't get there any sooner than that because schools are getting out later. And really for children, you're talking about the hours of 4 to 8 p.m. So you've only got 4 hours a day that you can work with. Now, because you're only working with 4 hours a day, you have to get the maximum use of your space during that time. So there's two things that I would suggest. Number one, I'll tell you just sort of a quick aside is that we're looking right now at a potential fifth location, and one of the things that we've done that a lot of schools don't do is we have – most of our schools have multiple classrooms. And at least two and sometimes three classrooms within the school. They're not overly large classrooms. The class, you know, if you had 2,500 square feet and you had a 2,000 square foot training area, I can tell you if I walked into your school, the first thing I'd say is divide that into two classrooms so that you have 2,000 foot classrooms instead of one 2,000 foot classrooms. And the reason is because, again, you only have 4 hours to teach. You've got between 4 and 8. So the more you can divide up your classes, if you're teaching one class an hour, if you're doing it between 4 and 8, you can get 4 classes in, I can get 8. And if I can get 8 classes in, I can spread out my curriculum a little more. I can put less belts per class. I can vary my age groups more by doing that. So it just makes it much easier for the staff to teach because you can spread out your student body, which again that equates to student service. Now, going back to the twice a week program, that's something else that's very important. And there are a lot of different ways to look at it, but one of the things that that we talk about when the students come in to enroll is we say, listen, we know that you know, Joey's involved in other activities, and maybe he has religious school, maybe he has other sports that he's involved in. What we want to do is we want to make sure that he comes consistently 2 days a week. If he comes consistently 2 days a week, he's going to make some progress, and he's going to benefit from our program. Now, that the benefits aren't going to happen overnight. We wish it was as simple as turning on a light switch or turning it off, but it takes time. And over time, you'll see those, the changes that we're looking for, his confidence, his concentration. You'll see all those things start to improve. And what we want you to do is we want you to pick 2 days a week because we don't want you to be overwhelmed. If you have somebody and you say, hey, you can come as much as you want, my experience, because we did that too, when I first started, and what happened was the person would come in, 5 days the first week, and they would tell you, oh, this is great, I love it. Next week it's 4 times, the week after it's 3 times, a week later it's 1, and then you get a call from the mom saying, he just burned out, he's got too many other things, and, we tried karate and now we want to quit. Or worse yet, they say, we can only make it twice a week because we got too many other things going on, but we were paying you for unlimited classes, and we can only come twice a week, so now I want a discount. So you just get them used to that twice a week program. It's easy for them to fit on their schedule. And even if they're not involved in something else right now, if you have them on an unlimited program, eventually they're going to be involved in something else. And when they are, mom or dad's going to say, well, you're already involved in karate. You can't do that. They're going to say, I want to quit karate then. So as long as they can do karate a couple days a week, do some other activities on their other days, then they have a balanced life, and that's really what it's all about.
And in keeping those students training continuously, I know that motivation is very, very important, and you have a very good reward system for students, and you produce quality students as well. And I know that some people, you know, sometimes they're hesitant as to making changes to even their belt system, you know, whether to incorporate stripes or additional color belts, and some people are limited based on the associations they belong to. But, you know, you seem to be able to you maintain your standards as far as the black belts that you produce. But tell us a little bit about how you've developed that motivational aspect of your school using the ranks and how it's helped you.
Well, you know, I think, you know, you got to look at it from the student's perspective. And, you know, the question you ask is, you know, what is the best thing for the student? And, you know, when I started training, we had, you know, white, yellow, green, blue, brown, and black. That was it. And, you know, once you got your brown belt, you were brown belt for about 2 years before you could test for your black belt. And, you know, when I started training, I was a teenager, and it was, you know, that was just what the standard program was. It wasn't real exciting, but I wasn't training for the belt. But what you have to remember, especially when you're dealing with children, not necessarily for adults, but with children, they need that constant reinforcement. And if they don't get it, they sort of, you know, they take their eye off the ball. But when that, you know, when that carrot's dangling right there in front of them, it keeps them coming. It keeps them, you know, reaching for that next goal. And, you know, besides the fact that it's a reward system that builds up their confidence, you know, what we did is, you know, we sort of took the traditional approach and said, you know, what's going to be the best way for our students? And, you know, we started out, you know, some of the mistakes we made. We had, you know, a program that basically for the first year they got a belt every 3 months. And then it was you get a belt every 6 months for the next 2 years. And then eventually you could, you know, test for your black belt. And then I, you know, what I found was that, you know, for the first year we weren't losing anybody, but we had a tremendous dropout rate when we changed it from a 3 month belt promotion to a 6 month belt promotion. You know, as you said, many people are, you know, they're in associations where they don't have a lot of flexibility, but, you know, I've sort of looked at it as, you know, whatever's going to be best for my student, that has to take precedence over any association or group that I'm involved in, because I'm here for them. And, you know, if by changing the belts and having one belt every 3 months versus, you know, making them wait for six, you know, there's really only two belts that matter to me. One is the brand new white belt that I got, and the next belt that's really important is the black one. So what they get in between there, as long as I'm rewarding them and as long as they're staying in their training, you know, of course we, you know, because of the fact that they're only coming twice a week you know, their classes aren't quite as long as they were back when I was a student, you know, what I did to, you know, address that is I said, okay, they're not coming as often as I did. They're not coming as long for classes as I did. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to increase the length of time that it takes to get there. So that by the time you add up all the training hours that they've, you know, that they've accumulated over the course of their training, when they test for their black belt, it's the same. In the meantime, what I do in between doesn't really matter. So if I only had five belts between white and black when I was a student, you know, we may have 12 belts or, you know, 15 belts in between there now. And, you know, the bottom line is what's going to be best for the student, what's going to keep them motivated and keep them in the school, keep them training, keep them active. And if we look at it from that perspective, you know, it makes things, you know, again, going back to, you know, the customer service issue, you want to do things that are going to, you know, going to help them reach their goal. And, you know, my goal isn't to get them to green belt or red belt. My goal is to get them to black belt.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't agree with you more on that. I think the black belt is the most important belt. I think that as long as you maintain that there's a standard for black belt in your school, everything that's happening between white and to get them to that point should really be the most marketing type thing that you can do with your students. And to me, when people say, well, you know, well, traditionally this is you know, how we've been, you know, how our style does, our association does it, you know, my response to that basically is, well, you know, if you go back even further in time, there was only white and black. There was nothing in between. So these other things, you know, have come about for various reasons. It's tough. A lot of people are in a situation that's very difficult, and they can't change that. But I feel that with the with retention being probably one of the most important things that we need to do as an industry to improve, to keep our students training in martial arts, something as simple as providing a lot of rewards for them along the way to keep them motivated is so absolutely important. In fact, it is what I think what makes martial arts so special is that because there is a ranking system. You know, it's what the Boy Scouts use with all their different levels and the Girl Scouts. These are very effective things, and you know, you do it so well, and I think that you know, you're one of the people out there that doesn't compromise what it means to be a black belt, and that's why I really wanted to get you know, your opinion on it, because I know that that's always the big concern for people. Is like they don't want to change what their black belt means, and they need to realize that they don't have to. Their black belts can be just as good, but the road to get there, if it can be manipulated in a way that helps the student, everybody wins.
Yeah, if you force them out the door, you know, early, because, you know, you just have to, you know, you have to think about who you're dealing with, and you know, a lot of times when you're an adult, you look at it from an adult perspective, but you can't. You know, if you're training, you know, children, teenagers, adults, you know, you have to look at it from the adult perspective and set up their program in a certain way. You know, and our adult program is run differently than our children's program, and you know, you have to have programs in place that, you know, as I said, that put the students first and you know, the quality of their program first. And if you do that, the rest takes care of itself. You know, if the people enjoy it, they refer people, they love you to death, and you know, it just makes things so much easier to run your school.
You know, the one thing that I hope everyone got out of today's interview is the fact that you do have a very consistent message, whether it be in the way that you advertise, to probably the way that your school looks visually, to what you discuss with your staff, to the way you design your programs, is that there's a consistency there. Things don't contradict each other. And when you have everything working towards the same objective and the same goal, you have a much greater chance of achieving that. And, you know, I'm real excited for you. I know you have some goals and things that you've been working towards, and I, you know, I just love seeing you hit them all the time. The other thing with your opening of your fifth location, you know, it's, again, it's starting another school, and there's probably a set of things in your mind that you're going to do right off the bat. Can you just tell us what you have this fifth school go through? What are like three things that you know you're going to do because it's going to get you off to a great start? I constantly tell clients, you know, every day is a new beginning. So, you know, if you have 50 students, well, look at your school from this point forward as a brand new school with a 50-student head start. So everybody can take advantage of things to build your business. What are three, four things, whatever comes to mind, that you know you're doing in this new place to make sure that it's going to reach the level of success that your other four schools have?
Well, the first one is pray. you got to do that one. But, you know, after that, you know, I think that there's, you know, there's some things that you do everywhere. And you know, and the bottom line is you got to work hard and you got to work smart. And, you know, one of the keys to success is getting involved in the community. You know, the very first school that I opened, you know, before I even had the doors opened, I wandered over to the local, you know, city government office, to the rec department there, and you know, I asked them if they had a karate program that they were offering through the rec department, and they said, yes, we do. And I said, well, you know, are you real happy with it? And they said, well, it's okay. And, you know, and of course that opened the door for me, and you know, and I told them, you know, well, we're going to be right here in the center of town, and we'll, you know, she told me, you know, I asked her what the concerns were that she had with the other program, and they said, you know, well, they constantly are changing the times of the classes and the days, and, you know, and they're not real good about contacting the students, and it's an adequate program, but it's not something we're real happy with. And I said, well, you know, heck, we'll take it on. We'll do everything for you. We'll give them new uniforms. We'll call them ahead of time. We'll give them directions. We'll bring them in. We'll talk to them. And of course, when we're done with the 5 or 6 week program, we'll try to enroll them as our student too. But we've been working with the rec department for, in that same city for now 11 years straight. And, in fact, this week they just started their fall program, which, added about 30 people coming into our classes for the next 6 weeks. And, of course, my program directors there are, working with these students daily, contacting them, trying to convert them. And, they typically average about 60 to 65% of those students who get involved in this recreation program will come on board as full-time students afterwards. So, you got to work hard. You've got to get involved in the community. You've got to get the word out that you're there. And you can do that through your advertising, your marketing efforts, a lot of grassroots stuff. And the bottom line is you have to have somebody who's going to go into that school and not sit there and wait for the phone to ring. They have to be very proactive. They've got to go, talk with other businesses, come up with creative ideas, go over and say, hey, we're just open over here, and I'm offering all the employees that work in this shopping center a free month of karate if they want to come over and try it and see what they think. Anything that you can do, to generate people into the business. The other thing that I would tell you is if you're going to open an additional location, not to go too far away. I mean, if you came and you looked at our schools, we could probably take a tour of, my 4 schools and even this 5th one within about an hour and 15 minutes, going in, looking at the school, getting back in the car, driving to the next one, and so on. So they're only maybe 4 miles apart in terms of from one to the other. They're not real far apart. And, so when we're going into a new location, we already have a reputation there. And, we want to definitely take advantage of that. And again, the more schools we have in the area, the more our reputation spreads, and it just makes things a little easier from that perspective. But I think that marketing has to be, the top priority. You have to have somebody in there who's ready to go, who's ready to work, and who's going to put the effort into going out and finding those new students. And, you've got to have somebody in there that knows what they're doing in terms of enrollments and, getting them started and keeping the classes pumped up, because, when you enrolled your first 2 or 3 kids and somebody comes to class, 3 kids in class, one of 2 things happens. The 3 turns into 2 or it turns into 4. And so depending on the energy in your class, it's sometimes hard to motivate that smaller class. So if you do things that way, it can really help you.
Well, this has been fantastic information. I'm going to turn it over to our clients to ask some questions that they may have burning inside, and hope you can answer them for them.
Sure, be happy to.
Who would like to speak first?
I'll ask a question. John, this is Ann. I live in Alabama, and I heard you say earlier that your adult program is run differently than your kids program. I'm kind of struggling with trying to restructure my curriculum right now, and I'm trying to find out in what way your adult program is run differently, and if you have, kids and parents taking together that want to get together, how does that work?
Well, first, I would say 2 things. First, our adult program is different in, I would say, more so in how we teach, not so much in what we teach.
Okay.
And what I mean, if you're teaching a child a joint lock, to the kid, they want to just sort of learn it and go through it, and it's no big deal. But if you're teaching it to an adult, you have to explain it in detail. Well, here's how you're bending the wrist, and it's putting pressure on these ligaments, and they want all that extra information. They want to know the history of where the technique came from and all that kind of stuff. The kids don't really care. They want to learn it and move on. The other thing I would say just about that is that, that's probably the primary difference in our children's program and in our adult program is that, they all learn the same sort of kick punch techniques. They all learn the same, one-step sparring techniques that we do, the same kicking combinations and so on, and the same forms. But the one difference is that we do teach the you know, grab defenses, different joint locks for, you know, bear hugs and, you know, front grabs and those types of things. We teach those to the adults. We don't teach those to the kids simply because they start laughing and goofing off a little too much. And, you know, again, my first rule for the class is it's got to be safe. And my experience has been that the younger kids just don't have the control. They, you know, when they start touching each other, they start laughing and giggling, and, you know, you don't want somebody to, you know, get a broken wrist or a broken arm because, you know, their pal was, you know, fooling around and wasn't paying attention. So that those are the two differences, I would say, in it. But, you know, the other thing that we do is we have, you know, for our adults, there's a little bit more realistic self-defense element. We don't talk a lot about, you know, we talk about bullies and we talk about, you know, child safety and things like that with the kids, but we don't talk a whole lot about, you know, hey, if somebody ever attacks you and you get assaulted, you know, here's what you do. Because, you know, in Maryland, and it's probably the same way in Alabama, they have a, you know, something called a zero tolerance policy in the school, meaning it doesn't matter whether you started it or I started it, we're both suspended. So you have to teach them other methods to, you know, resolve the conflicts and you know, and really that, you know, their martial arts is only a last resort. So it's really more for the life skills and the other things that they teach. And, you know, and of course the other thing that's really different for kids today than when I was a kid, you know, it wasn't uncommon when I was a kid that, you know, that somebody would say, hey, I'm going to get you after school. You know, you can't say that now because the parents are there picking the kids up, so nobody's getting anybody after school.
What is your age breakdown for adult and kids?
We have three breakdowns. Our little ninjas are 4 to 6. The children's program is ages 7 to 12, and teen and adult is ages 13 and over.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
John?
Thanks, Dan.
John?
Yes.
Yeah, how you doing? How long does it take you in your style to make a black belt?
It takes 4 years from white to black in our children's program. A lot of times a little longer than that because, you know, basically what we do is, you know, we start them at the beginning. We go through you know, the program, and basically it's 3 months, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months, until they get to what we call a half brown, half black belt. Now, at that point, that's where we say, okay, guys, you know, here's the bar. You got to get to the bar. We're not bringing the bar down for you. You got to get to the bar. So what happens a lot of times is, you know, they make it all the way, and then, you know, there are some kids that are, you know, that are really dedicated and talented that can make that next step in 3 months. But there are, you know, I would say the majority of the students, you know, when they get to that point are 6 to 9 months, maybe a year before they actually make it, which, you know, which makes it a little tough. You know, sometimes we, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said that we never lost anybody at that level. But, you know, they're so close that a lot of times, you know, if you're too hard on them when they're, you know, when they can see the light at the end of the tunnel, you can be a little harder on them. When they can't quite see it yet, if you're a little harder on them and you require them to do too much too soon, what we see is that, you know, that's when they'll want to drop out. They just, you know, they'll give up.
Okay.
Great. Next. Any other questions?
Yeah, I do have a question. This is Chuck Crone from Crone's Taekwondo School in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Chuck.
How you doing?
Great.
Good. Hey, we also run a Little Ninjas program, and I was just curious how you structure your belt system with Little Ninjas. How do you run that program, and also what do you do for uniforms?
Okay. We just use the basic, you know, the regular karate uniform. We get them from Century, not to plug Century, but that's where we get them. And, you know, that we buy, you know, starting at, I think, 000, 000, 000, you know, in the zero uniforms for the younger kids. We get our logo screened on them in the back. The only difference in the uniform between that and our children's program is the belts that they get. And what we do is we use the striped belts. So all of the belts are, you know, it's yellow with a half-inch white stripe, gold with a half-inch white stripe, you know, orange with a half-inch white stripe. And we have the same belts, and the program goes all the way up through brown. We didn't do a black one with a white stripe because that one just struck me as being, you know, a little – you know, a little in that uncomfortable zone. I didn't
sacrilegious.
Right. But we took it all the way up to Brown, and then there are certain points where they can go into the children's class. One is if they hit age 7, and the second one is if they graduate from that program, they can go into the children's class. So occasionally we have somebody that's still, you know, 6 that makes it into the children's class, but we try to avoid that at all costs because we want them to be at least 7 when they're going in because we don't want to have kids that are 9 years old testing for black belt.
Right. So, now, how do you do that when they transition into the children's class as far as the belts are concerned?
We actually just let them wear their belt. What we tell them, like let's say you have a student, he's a green belt. He's got a green with a white stripe, and his mom calls you up and says, you know, hey, you know, Joey's birthday is this Saturday. He's going to be turning 7 years old. What should we do? Now, if we're coming up on a belt test, what we do is we say, you know, well, why don't you just keep him where he is until he takes his next belt test, and then he'll be a blue belt with a white stripe, and then he's going to go into the, you know, into our children's class. Now, what if you went and you looked at our white belt children's class, what you would see is you'd see two things. You'd see kids that were in between the ages of 7 and 12 wearing white belts, and you'd see kids that are you know, either 7 because they just turned it or that were wearing a brown belt that had gotten as far as they could that are wearing the little ninja belt in class. So they actually will transition into that class, into the white belt class, and the first belt that they test for in the solid belt program would be solid gold. So they don't, you know, I don't mix them in at, you know, orange belt or green belt or anything like that. They, you know, because the program, the way we run it, and we've got a very, very successful little ninja program. You know, we have the kids, they test every 3 months, but the goal of the program is basically, you know, improve their motor skills, balance, coordination, agility, et cetera, and secondarily working on their concentration, their listening skills, just those basic skills that the kids need, you know, how to pay attention, how to look in the eyes, all those kinds of things. Our classes are only a half hour long. Our little ninja program is divided into 2 levels. Beginners and advanced. Beginners is the white and the gold, and then once they hit yellow, they go into the advanced class, and then they stay in that class until they graduate. So first 6 months that they're in the program, they're in the beginner class, and then from the 6-month point on, they're in the advanced class until they go into the children's class.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, we have our little ninja program broken into a couple different divisions. One is mini ninja, 3 and 4 years old.
Right.
Then we get little ninjas, 5 and 6, and, of course, the beginner and advanced.
That's great.
But we've been using the little ninja uniforms, the urban uniforms.
Right.
Which now they're not available. And we're at a point now where we're getting ready to move into a new building, so we're going to try to change the whole program at that time. But I want to make sure I don't say, boy, I wish we'd have done it something, you know, a different way after we do it.
Right, right. Well, you always approach it from I'm doing what's best for the students, and you know, and every time we've made a change, every single time, you know, if we make a change in the belt structure, we make a change in, you know, the class schedule, you can never please 100% of the people, but as long as you go in and you say, you know, listen, this move is done in the best long-term interest of the students. And if you can answer that question that, you know, yes, it is, it's in the best long-term interest of the students, then you make the change and you move forward from there. And, you know, there are a few bumps in the road for the first couple of months, but after that, everybody's on board with it, and it's, you know, and you're fine.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you.
Anyone have any other questions?
John, I'm going to hop back in here. Sorry, you're going to hear a lot from me today. When you split the kids up at the yellow or like the orange and above, do they at each level, when you get an orange belt little dragon and a purple belt and a brown belt, are you teaching the whole group the same thing or are they learning different requirements?
Same thing. Because again, you know, what we do, and I'll tell you that, you know, we test these little ninjas every 3 months, and they get a new belt every 3 months, and I charge them $40 to take an examination every 3 months. But they, you know, really the goal is, you know, let me put it this way, no one fails, because the goal is to improve. That's the goal. The goal is, you know, it's like going to preschool. You know, if you go to preschool, you don't get graded really in preschool. You know, everybody moves to the next level of preschool. You can't fail. Once you get into regular school, you can fail. You know, if you don't learn how to read or you don't learn how to, you know, do the math correctly, they can hold you back. But in preschool, they don't hold anyone back. And, you know, that's sort of the philosophy that we have with our little ninjas. We want the kids to come. We want them to advance. We want them to learn, you know, if their concentration got better, if their balance got better, if their agility got better, if their listening skills got better, then the belt is just a reward. Hey, you've done a great job. Way to go. Well, now we give them a test, and we have them do kicks and things, but it's sort of a formality. And then we call them up, and everybody claps for them, and they get their new belt, and, you know, and they go through and they take the exam. You know, that's sort of the one challenge that you have once the kids go into the regular children's program, because there is a defined curriculum. And at that point, you know, sometimes the kids that were in your little ninja program, you have to say, wait a minute, this isn't automatic anymore. You need to know X, Y, and Z, or you can't move up.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ann. Any other questions? Okay.
I am going to ask another question. Somebody else is going to. I'll make this my last one.
That's fine.
I don't know if you're working with mixed curriculum, but, again, I'm kind of struggling a little bit here trying to – and there's so much out there right now, and I want to do what's right for the students besides just the traditional program. How do you set up your classes or your curriculum using the mixed martial arts, and you get stuff like trying to pull in qualities of the bully busters and self-defense and ultimate black belt test, that type of thing, into your class? Are you dealing with that, or are you strictly staying with your traditional program?
Well, here's what you have to do. You have to sift through the junk. There's, you know, everybody and his brother is trying to sell something, and some of it's good stuff and some of it is not so good. And, you know, and you also have to do what works for you. You know, the one thing you can't do is you can't constantly add a program, because, you know, that's when, you know, the one thing that people are resistant to is they're resistant to change. And, you know, so when you add a change, you have to do it not because you want to change something, but because it's, again, in the best long-term interest of your students. So, you know, what you have to do is you have to figure out what is it exactly that you want to teach. You know, I'll give you an example. We had, you know, especially with four schools, one of the things that we struggled with was I had some guys that were teaching classes that were exceptional young martial artists, guys that were, you know, 22, 23, 24 years old, that were, you know, incredibly gifted physically, but they didn't have that much experience in life. They just weren't old enough yet, and there's some things that you can teach and there's some things that you can't teach. You just have to live and you have to go through the experience of it. And when it came to teaching the life skills, we were struggling a little bit. There just, you know, there were some things that weren't getting across, and one of the things that I did was I sat down and I devised a program where we would, you know, instead of giving weekly lessons or monthly lessons, we basically have one monthly theme, and we divide it into three parts. And those three parts, you know, we do one from the 1st to the 10th, one from the 11th to the 20th, and one from the 21st to the end of the month. And I actually wrote a script, and we put it on a clipboard, and the instructors walk into the classes, and they read the life skills. And they actually read it right off the sheet, and it's just a short story to talk about something. And that way what we did is we avoided having too much, you know, going on in the class of the instructor giving it sort of their own angle and, you know, maybe not getting the message across as well as we wanted it to come across. So, you know, we changed some things that way. But what we had to do is, you know, as you said, there's just a ton of different programs that you can get involved in the industry, and you have to pick, you know, which programs are going to work for your students, which ones are the best ones out there, and then, you know, sort of formulate your curriculum around them. And, you know, for me, the most important thing that I wanted the kids to get was the life skills. So we spent a lot of time working on that. We didn't change too much, and, you know, and I guess the only advice I would give you there is also, you know, and what you sort of have to do is you have to go out there and you have to sort of sift through it all, and then you sort of say, okay, this one works for me, this one doesn't work for me. I'm going to take, and the other thing you'll do is you'll take, you know, well, I like this piece from this and this piece from this, so I'm going to put them together, and now here's how I'm going to do it. And, you know, and that's sort of, you know, sort of the way you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you very, very much, John, for taking a good chunk of your time out to spend with us today. The information you provided was incredibly informative. Certainly in the conversations that we continue to have is always great for me, and I appreciate that very much. There will be a recording of this interview on our website next Wednesday, as well as the teleconferences provided by Allie and Melody earlier this month. So I want to thank everyone for coming on board and joining us today and asking questions. The networking is a very, very big part of what we'd like to create at Member Solutions to help our clients grow. So thank you very much, and hope everybody has a great day.
All right. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
Welcome.
Take care.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Very much. Everyone.